How cool. You guys are singing well. Friday night, just fun to listen to you sing. Excited about that. Crazy. Final service. Final night of an excellent week of camp. I've only seen you from a distance at the beginning. Then I've had a little bit of time to get to know you here. You're a fun group. You're like cool people. I don't know what the new word is today, but for me, you're just cool. So old guy calls you cool. That's got to be good. That's got to be a good thing right there. Tonight, I'm going to give you, before we get into the passage, I have a tendency to do that. There's a few things that I just want to tell you, and it's not Bible and verse, and it's kind of like little life advice, you know? It's like grandpa saying, okay, son, here's something you need to remember. And that's what it is. I just got five things. We're going to go real quick, and then we'll get into the passage. And you might not agree with me. I don't have Bible verse, and we don't have to, you know, get all upset about it. But these are five things that I wish I was kind of figuring them out, but if you can figure this out in high school, man, you are just so much farther ahead than everybody else. So five things you should know before you graduate from high school. Number one, never underestimate the value of speech and English. I know that's hard. You're like, no, don't say that. But, I mean, my dad used to tell me, you know, the one subject you need to really work at is English. It's the way you communicate. And then at the time, I'm like, no, I don't want to hear that. But I'm telling you, speech and English are two subjects that if I were you, I would work hard at those two things. Even if you're like, wait a minute. English has like bazillion exceptions. Uh-huh. You just got to keep on learning it, and it's a good thing. Number two, your job is part of your education. Work hard at learning when you're on the job. It's one of these things you kind of have a thought that, okay, this is just a job I'm going to burn. This is a job that's it's not like my real job. It's just like a job. But I'm telling you, every single job you've got, you can learn from that job. Now, sometimes I have learned how not to be a manager from the manager that I had at the job. And that's good. That's good learning right there. I have been amazed in my life right now, in the role that I'm doing now, all the jobs that I had I worked in a nursery, like a plant nursery. I worked at a restaurant, semi-formal restaurant. I worked on a loading dock. I did lawn work. You know, every single job that I've had has kind of fit into some other job or thing that I've had to do along the way. And so your job is part of your education. It's like a class, and God has put you in that spot. So number one, never underestimate the value of speech and English. Number two, the job is part of your education. Number three, not everything given to me is for me. Not everything given to me is for me. One of the things that you have to realize, some of you are actually going to make a lot of money in your life. You're actually going to do decently well. I'm guessing there's a few millionaires in this room. Anybody with a little bit of character, a person who really works hard at it, it's possible that you can be a millionaire. That's probably more money than you need. So the question is, when you get more than you need, what are you going to do with it? Because not everything given to me is for me. And it's probably one of the most fun things in my life is all of a sudden, something happens and I'm like, oh, this is my chance to give to somebody else. This is something that I'm able to do with the way God has blessed me. Number four, this one is huge. Number four is massive. Probably the biggest one on the list. Fun is the byproduct, not the goal. Fun is the byproduct, not the goal. There's a lot of people who kind of go through life and they think that their whole life is trying to figure out how they're going to have the most fun. Like I just want to have fun. I found myself as a parent asking my kids after they come home from, did you guys have fun? As if that were the most important. Okay, did you have fun? That's the most important thing that could possibly happen. But you realize that in the process of doing what God wants you to do, of doing something even for a cause bigger than yourself, being involved in a plan that's bigger than my life, that it just kind of happens along the way of doing all that you realize this is fun. It was somewhere this afternoon when I was practicing eating fire again, and I haven't ate fire in like, I don't know, it was like 5 or 6 years or something like that. And I realized as I'm eating fire this afternoon, I'm like, I get paid to do this. I mean, who gets to just do this? I get to drive a Jeep. I've been given a quad. I get to work with a big old lake in my backyard. This is just fun. Not all the time. There's a little bit of work that's involved, but I'm amazed that in the process of just doing what God has for me to do, I wake up each morning and I'm telling you, it's like it's not work. It's not hard. Now, I'm not saying that that's every day. There are some days I wish I could just stay in bed. But living right is the most fun I have ever had. The most miserable times in my life is when I know I'm doing wrong. It just weighs on you. You know that you're not doing the right thing. You're a grumpy kid or a grumpy adult. And fun is not my goal in life. But if I'll do what God tells me to do, it will be a byproduct. And now, everything that the world is living for, you know, have the fun, have the toys, and have all of that stuff, for me, it's just something that happens along the way, which is so cool. It's not my goal in life. Number 5, I would make sure you do at least one summer of summer ministry of some sort, somehow. You got to kind of decide when you're in high school, that's going to be my goal. Because at some point, you just saw a bunch of people up here singing, they could make more money at any other job than this one. Like, this is not a economically, like, wise choice. But it is a great life choice. There is an education that happens from the work of ministry. There is an encouragement that happens from the work of ministry. There is something that you gain from a summer of ministry that you can't gain at any other time in your life. And so you want to take advantage of what I would call this third semester, this opportunity to be involved in summer ministry, whether it's a camp or a church or some other ministry that's working with people. It's just a really cool way to spend your summer. And at some point, you will choose to earn less money or to give of yourself or whatever it is, but you've just got to say in the back of your mind, man, this is worth it. It is worth it to be able to do this work for God. There does come a time sometimes in your life where, you know, you get married, you have kids, you've got a job. You can't just tell you know, I'd like to do a summer ministry. That'd be cool. Okay, you're fired. That doesn't work for you. There's this window of opportunity that you have. It's just a few years that gives you the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to do a summer ministry with my life. I would encourage you to do that. Turn in your Bibles, if you would, to Galatians chapter 5. We will spend the evening in Galatians 5 and 6. Galatians chapter 5. I'll wait for you for a moment to get there. Help everybody else find the passage. Galatians chapter 5. The context here of this passage, Paul has been telling the Galatians lots of things. We're coming to kind of the end of the book. We have a paragraph here that we're going to look at. It actually spans two chapters, but it begins in chapter 5, verse 13, and then it runs all the way down to chapter 6, verse 10. That's all one paragraph. Now, any of you who are English kind of people, you understand that many times at the beginning of that paragraph, there's a thesis sentence. There is a sentence that kind of tells us a little bit of what this paragraph is about. Let's read it in Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. For brethren, we have been called unto liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. Okay. So here's what we're trying to do. We're going to recognize that we've been called into liberty. We're not going to use this liberty as an occasion for what we want, but by love we serve one another. Now the rest of this chapter, in verses 15 through 21, we see that it's talking about how we walk in the flesh and what that all looks like. So now if I'm walking and doing everything the way I want to do, this is what it would look like. Starting in verse 22, we start to see 22 through 26, we start to see somebody who's walking in the Spirit. Somebody who would say, okay, God, you tell me how to live. You tell me how to walk. This is what I will do. This is what it would look like. And we see that being described. In chapter 6, then we start to see how a person is, verses 1 through 5, how a person would walk if they were in the flesh. And then we see, okay, here's how I would help that person. Here's how a person who is walking in the Spirit would help a person who's walking in the flesh. Okay? That's the context of where we get. And I started looking at this passage when I decided in my life, I wanted to study some of the verses that I'd always heard all my life. You know, there's a few of them that are on walls everywhere, and they're on plaques all over the place. And I just wanted to get a context of that passage. And I have turned to this passage right here, Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, was a common verse that I had always heard. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And that is one of those verses that, you know, I've heard quite often, quoted to me in little pieces or parts. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Now, you normally hear this verse in kind of the context that is basically saying, you can't get away with it. Don't be deceived. Don't be fooled. You can't get away with it. If you're doing bad things are going to come around. You know, you're sowing and reaping. That's another one that comes up here a little bit later. You're cruising here. You're headed down a path. It's going to come back around. And boy, you can't get away with it. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever man sows, that shall he also reap. Now, chances are, when you hear those words, you can't get away with it. What immediately comes to your mind? Don't tell me. Just think of whatever comes to your mind. You can't get away with it. There's probably two or three groups in the room. And one of the groups is a person who says, yeah, you're right. Every time I do something that I try to get away with, boom! My parents have eyes in the back of their head, like the teacher just knows, like I can get away with nothing. Reminds me of a time when I was 6 years old, and I was in Kmart. And I looked around, and I stole a comb. Back then, okay, I'm in the mid-70s here. Back then, it was really cool to put a comb in your back pocket and for it to stick out. There are a couple sponsors who know what I'm talking about. Most of them are too young, too. But you had that comb that you could kind of, you just pull it out, you know, you kind of did this little number right here and you slipped it in your back pocket. But my parents wouldn't buy a fad comb for me. I'm six, so I had to steal it. So I stole this comb, and I put it in my back pocket, and I walked out of Kmart. I was on my way to the car with my getaway driver, Mom, and I pulled this comb out of my pocket, and I started combing my hair like a cool dude. And I put it back, and my mom looks down, and she says, Sam, where did you get that comb? And I pulled it back out of my pocket, and I stole it. My getaway driver was not on my team at that moment. She just grabs my hand, like just, it's like one of those quick moves, like, and I'm like, what? And all of a sudden, the little whipsaw thing, you know, like better than any amusement park, whoosh, and back in the store we went to the customer service desk, and my mom says, may we see the manager? And, oh, man, I'm going to jail, you know? And I learned a huge important lesson. You don't steal things, okay? Especially with your mom as the getaway driver. It's a really dumb move. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. You're like, okay, I can't get away with this. I got caught. So there are a group in this room that would be like, yeah, you can't do it. There's another group in this room. And that group is like looking and thinking, you're just not smart enough to get away with it. You just don't get it. Huh. That group reminds me of a time when I was in college. Let's see, sophomore year. I had a freshman roommate. I don't even know his name. We called him Beaker. He was a freshman. And we would sit up at night and we would talk and goof around. One of my room leaders was Tim, and another guy in my room, his name was Jim. And so Tim and Jim were both older than me and Beaker. And we were in this room, and I don't know, it was probably 2 in the morning. We'd been talking and goofing off. We were decent friends or whatnot. And Jim sits there and he says, "Hey, Beaker, you ought to go down the hall and turn on one of the lights and run back." And Beaker's not a very bright guy. He's kind of like, "Why?" And Jim's like, "Because it would be fun." And Beaker's like, "Okay." And so we were on second floor, and it was a 3-story building, and we were on second floor, and our room is kind of in the middle of the hall. There's like as many doors down that way as there are down that way. On that end is a stairwell, and on this one there's kind of a center set of steps and whatnot. So there we were, and so Beaker goes out 2 in the morning. Hall's quiet, obviously. Everybody's been to sleep for 2 or 3 hours, and he goes down maybe 3 doors, and we're all like looking out the door, like, "Yeah, do it, this is great." And he turns open the door, flips on the light, runs back to our room. We open the door, and then we just pulled it open barely, and we peeked. And like 4 guys sitting there looking out. And we're looking down the hall, and we see this guy come out his door. And he goes back in and he shuts the door. And we die laughing. I don't know why. I don't know why we thought it was funny, but we're like, "That was great. Beaker, do it again." And Beaker's like, "Why?" And Jim was like, "It would be fun." "Okay." And so we wait about 20 minutes and we're talking like, "This is going to be fun. Okay, same door, right?" "Oh, yeah, let's do the same door." And so he goes down and we're all sitting there looking, and he opens the door, leaves it open, flips on the light, runs back in. And I mean, this time a little bit quicker, you can see some guy come out and he shuts the door. "Oh, I will die! That was so much fun! That was great! Oh man, I'm tired. Let's do it again tomorrow night." So we decided, I don't know why, we set the alarm for 2 a.m. and we woke up and we said, "Let's do it again." But this time we're like, "Beaker, you got to do a door down the way, like farther down the hall." "Why?" "Because it'd be fun." "Okay." And so Beaker is on the far end. He's way down the hall. And, you know, he's kind of sitting there in his pajamas and he's getting ready to sprint down to our door. And he turns over the door and flips on the light, runs all the way down inside. And we wait and like nothing happens. And we wait and we wait and we're looking. And eventually a guy comes out. And he looks around, goes back in. "Let's do it again." We hit about 4 doors that night. Just boom, 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 boom. We're like, "That was fun. Let's do it again tomorrow night." "Yeah, let's do it again tomorrow night." At some point, our hall gets together, and our hall leader brings everybody together. "Okay, hall meeting. Everybody get together." So our whole hall comes out, and they're all sitting out there. And our hall leader says, "I don't know how many of you have heard about it, but we have a notorious light switcher." "And how many of you guys have been hit by the notorious light switcher?" And all of us were like, "Oh, yeah, that's us. Yeah, we know what you're talking about." And about half the rooms, you know, like, "Yeah." And the other rooms like, "What are you talking about?" And it was like, "Some guy keeps turning on our lights. It's the notorious light switcher. We gotta catch him." So our holy is like, "Okay, we need to set up a security system. We're going to set up a way. I don't know if it's the guys cleaning the different floors. It might be a night watchman. I don't know who's doing this, but we got to catch him. So who would like to be head of security?" "Well, my roommate." "Oh, I'll do it." And so Jim becomes head of security. He sets up this whole schedule of how we're going to catch this guy and who's going to wait up and how all this stuff is going to happen. And for the next week, we would wake up in the middle of the night at exactly the half hour that Jim just missed a person to be there, and we would nail them. And I mean, at this point, we're just having to go fast. I mean, like we would go down, Jim or Beaker would be at the far room. He'd turn on the light, and I mean, we were so quick. He would go whoosh inside there. Every now and then, when he would come screaming in, we would then open our door, and we would go, "Oh man, somebody turned on our you too? Yeah, me too. You both got it. I can't believe this. Notorious light switcher. We gotta get this dude." Yeah, and so we go back in, dying laughing, like, this is the best, this is great. Okay, so what are we going to do? And we would try to get more and more bold. We would be like, how many doors could you hit? Oh. And he's like, I think I could get six. And Jim, when's nobody on? Like 4:30 in the morning. Oh, man, 4:30 in the morning, we got to go. Yeah, let's do it. And so 4:30 in the morning, six doors, boom, 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 ours, boom, boom, and he comes screeching back inside, whoosh, and all of us stepping up, Victoria's light switcher, I can't believe, 4:30, Jim, you are lucky, oh, man, and you know, the place is going crazy. One time, at this point, when we would send Beaker just a few doors down, they were quick. I mean, you would wait until you could hear people going to sleep or whatever, and we'd be like, okay, wait 15 minutes, but man, hall meetings, three or four of them. Okay, we got to figure out the Notorious light switcher. We got three suspects, you know, and they would give all of them. We got to find out who these guys are. One time, it was my favorite. Beaker's way down. We're like, Beaker, do the end of the hall. If we don't do the end of the hall, they're going to narrow it down. They're going to know who's doing this. And he's like, yeah, but they come out the doors fast. And I'm like, Beaker, you can do this. He's like, I don't know. Beaker, it'll be fun. Okay. So there he is. He's sitting there, he's got this door, and it's on the far end of the hall. We're kind of in the middle right there. And, you know, I can tell Beaker's nervous. He's like, oh, man. And so he sits there. I mean, it's fast on the door. It's like, boom, boom. And then he's running. And so sure enough, boom, boom. And he's running down. And as he's running, this guy comes out the door. And right as he's coming to our door, and Beaker's like, and he hears the guy yell at him, hey, it's Tarius light switcher. And he's like, yeah, and they went whoosh down different sides looking for an entire class. We did this for 4 weeks, never got caught. The entire dorm was talking about the Notorious light switcher. Who is it? And nobody knew until I went back to chapel at that particular college and told them we were the Notorious light switcher. Never got caught. And some of you are sitting there saying, yeah, see? You can get away with it. That's not what the Bible says. Let's look at this verse just a little bit more carefully. Be not deceived. Okay, so this implies that this would be an easy thing to be fooled by. This would be easy for us to be like, I'm convinced that it's this way or that way, but this is something that I've got to really be careful, that I might not have this right. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, okay? So God is not made fun of. God will, it's nobody's going to laugh at God on this area. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So what am I being deceived? I'm being deceived to think that I can sow, that I can do all this sowing and then not reap it, that I could do something and that there would be no result. And then he goes into this kind of this little couple of verses that deal with sowing and reaping. It's actually something that we don't, unless you're on a farm these days, you don't really think about it. Unless you do a garden, it's not something that sometimes in America that we really understand what's going on. For us in my home, it's like every now and then we try to grow a tomato. And our hope is to put one seed in the ground, see that thing grow up, and get a bunch of tomatoes. The whole concept of sowing and reaping is this, that I'm going to put a little something in the ground, and eventually that little something creates a lot. It's interesting in this passage. Look at what it says, verse 8. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So one thing we see about sowing and reaping, and I'm going to share four of them here with you real quick. One thing that we realize is that we reap the same as what we sow. So if I sow to the flesh, I reap of the flesh. If I sow to the Spirit, I reap from the Spirit. It's not like I get to say, okay, I'm going to sow to the flesh, and then all of a sudden I get all the spiritual rewards. All the spiritual. It doesn't work that way. This sowing and reaping happens in the same category. I never plant a tomato seed and expect to see oranges. Never happens. So when we sow and reap, we sow the same. In verse 8, it also tells us something about sowing and reaping. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. We realize not only the same, but it's later. That's one of the things that a farmer kind of understands. He understands that I plant this seed here in the spring and I harvest later on in the fall. For a while when I was in high school, I decided that I was going to pay for my way through college with an acre of pistachio trees. I did all the research on pistachio and I found out that this area, Yermo, Barstow, Newberry Springs, is as good an area to grow pistachios as the best area in the world, Turkey. And I'm like, cool, Yermo and Turkey, like the same. And then I started researching pistachio trees, and when you plant a pistachio tree and graft it and have the male pistachio and the female pistachio, and then they grow, it takes 7 years before you get your first pistachio, and then they're alternate bearing. You get to only harvest every other year. I'm like, okay, let's mark that off. Back to tomatoes. But that's that whole concept of later. I had a friend right on the road as you were coming down. I had a friend who had 2 acres of pistachios, and every other year they made $20,000 on their 2 acres. I'm like, okay, maybe it's worth the wait. Back to pistachios. You know, but it's that idea that it's later. So that's part of the deceit every now and then is we think, okay, if I do this now, nothing's happened. Nothing's happened. I got away with it. Like that's what we might be deceived to think. Not only, though, do we see it as the same and later, look at verse 8, for he that soweth of the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Not only do you sow the same, and not only does the reaping happen later, but when you reap, you get more. You plant the one seed, and that results in a plant that has a whole bunch. Look at this, the person who sows to the Spirit shall reap life everlasting, like forever. Wow. So I reap the same, I reap later, I reap more, and verse 7 is saying it will happen. Do not be deceived. God will not be mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And it's at this moment when I'm studying this passage that I'm like, wait a minute. Who is this passage to? Who is he talking to? And I started looking back at the context, and I looked back at the thesis sentence, but by love, serve one another, and then the guy who walks in the flesh, and then the guy who walks in the Spirit, and then helping the person, the guy in the Spirit who helps the person to walk, that is walking in the flesh. And now, verse 7 is talking to the guy who's doing right. Verse 7 is talking to the guy who is walking in the Spirit, and he's telling the guy who's doing right, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is not a verse that we say to people who are doing wrong, be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. This is a verse that is an encouragement to Christians who are doing right, you can't get away with it. Wait a minute, I normally hear that when I'm doing wrong. No. This is a truth. For those of you who have chosen to say, okay, I'm going to do what God tells me to do. I'm going to live my life like I should. This is a truth for you. What is so cool about this? You can't get away with it. What do you mean I can't get it? I didn't do anything wrong. Come on. No. The thing that you did right, God knows. Nobody else may know. But you can't get away with it. You are going to reap what you have sown. Oh, no, I don't want to get in trouble. No, you're not in trouble. God notices when a person chooses to do right. And although the whole world doesn't notice, and although the whole world may make fun of you for doing right, and although you're kind of going a direction that nobody else is going, this person's cool. You can't get away with it. Wow. And then I started to realize, verse 9, and let us not be weary in well-doing. He is talking to the guy walking in the Spirit. He is talking to the guy who's trying to do the right thing. He's just told me not to be deceived. God will not be mocked. And then he says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. You know what this verse implies? Is that it's hard to keep doing right. I get to a spot where I keep planting the seed, and I keep serving others, and I keep helping other people, and people are kind of making fun of that, and I'm trying to do the right thing, and all I'm doing is sowing, and I'm not getting anything back. Don't worry. This is sowing and reaping. Remember, it will happen later. It will happen more. But it's going to happen later. It's going to happen the same way that you are sowing here, and you keep on doing that, and the world makes fun of a Christian. You're wasting your life. Half of your weekend is gone just going to church. What are you thinking? You gave 10% to church or even more? What are you thinking? Are you nuts? No, don't help. Why do you have to help everybody, anybody? Like, no, okay. Okay, you got to think about yourself. Come on now. And you just keep on sowing and helping other people and doing everything that you can. And you know what? At some point, it gets hard. You're like, I'm ready to be done. You begin to ask yourself the question, is it worth it? Like, man, I have been sowing all my life. Is it worth it? Young people, I will venture to say that over the course of your life, at least 10 times, you will have a major discussion with yourself that says, is it worth it to, like, is this really true? Is this, am I going to keep doing this? Is it worth it to do right? I don't know when it will happen. Maybe it's going on right now in your life. But in the process of just living God's life, we get tired, we get weary, we get at the end, and we kind of sit down on a row that has been planting and sowing for years. And we sit there on that single row, and we've not seen a harvest, and we've not seen the reap yet. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap. That's an interesting verse. Once again, a farming term. For in due season, when that season is up, when you buy seeds from any store, on the back of it, it will tell you what season to plant. And then it will tell you about how long of a season it takes for the fruit to happen. Here's the deal when it comes to sowing. There are some of the things that we will sow that we will not reap until after we die. And you might be sitting there, okay, what's the use? The use is eternity, because eventually you will reap. Maybe not here on this planet. On this planet, it may feel unfair. It may feel like it never comes back. But when we get to the point where we have eternity and a perfect judge and a knowledgeable judge looks at the parts of your life and says, okay, what have you done? Be not deceived. God will not be made fun of. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Yeah! All right! This is so cool! Because it does not matter who sees it or what guy doesn't see it or what takes place. Man, God is going, I'm going to reap what I have sown. There's an interesting verse in Mark chapter 9. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Mark chapter 9, verse 41. The Word of God says, "For whosoever shall give you a cup of water to drink in my name, because you belong to Christ, verily I say unto you, he shall not lose his reward." This verse blows my mind. Because what is this verse saying? "For whosoever shall give you a cup of water..." Okay, so we're talking about something like a cool drink of water. "In my name, because you belong to Christ..." Now he's talking about motivation. What is the reason for that person to give you that water? So if they're doing it because they're not trying to get a paycheck, they're not trying to just do it for themselves, they're doing it in order to obey God, to minister to others, to help others, to love one another. This verse says, "Verily I say unto you, he shall not lose his reward." All week this week, somebody has put a pitcher of water on your table. And if they did that with the right motivation, they will reap for what they have sown something as simple as a pitcher of water on your table. God notices stuff like that. God, he's not just noticing like big, "Yes, I gave this person $1,000. No, he's going to notice a quarter. He's going to notice a cup of water. He's going to notice a kind word. He's going to notice an open door. He's going to notice a little bit of help, the little compliment, the little word. He's going to notice when in your effort to honor, to glorify God, to do his work, to live in the Spirit, we're going to reap from that seed. I just can't believe God notices a seed as small as a cup of water. And he says there's a reward. Wow. This is what God's talking about when he says, "Be not deceived." Don't be fooled. The world thinks you are wasting your life and you're the one sowing your entire life. I mean, for your whole entire life, you are just sowing, and waiting for an eternity when you get to enjoy the reap. That's what's so fun for the farmer is the harvest time. It's a whole lot of work up until then. But eventually, there's this time of harvest. "And let us not be weary in well-doing." We're back in Galatians chapter 6. "For in due season we shall reap if we faint not." Verse 10. "As we have therefore opportunity..." Ah, this is interesting. Okay, let's see what it's telling us. "As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith." So in this passage, in this paragraph, they start stacking it all up, and they bring us all the way to this point that says, so, if all of this is true, don't be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. When you reap, you're going to reap the same, you're going to reap later, you're going to reap more, and it is going to happen. So with all that in mind, if you have opportunity, let us do good unto all men. There's another one of those superlatives. Remember those all never words? All men. Whoever I come into contact in this planet, it's going to be my goal to do good to all men. And I love his little especially. Especially those that go to your church. Especially those who are Christians. Sometimes I think those are some of the hardest people to love. Why is that? As a young person, you're really good at noticing, inconsistencies. And so you kind of look around and you know inconsistencies with your parents. You're old enough to see some of those. You know inconsistencies with people who say they're Christians, but then you see that they don't act that way. And it's almost harder to love a person and care about a person who you're like, that person knows better, and they've even said that they know better, and they've said that they want to love other people, and look what they just did. Look how they just acted. Sometimes in our lives, we want to kind of call that person a hypocrite. Now, there are hypocrites in this world who say one thing and do another. But it is not a hypocrite who is a Christian who's trying to live for God, who at times doesn't, who sins. That's not their life habit. That's not what they're trying to do. That's actually the person that I need to love and care about and help. Sometimes we kind of discredit that person. We say, well, they have knowledge. They shouldn't be doing that. And I can't believe that. And we're nice to a stranger, but we're not nice to a Christian, to a fellow believer. You know what this verse is all about? It's kind of encouraging us to say, okay, so what's your opportunity? What could you do to just keep on sowing? Because for me, every pistachio tree that I would plant was like hundreds of dollars. So when I'm trying to figure out how many pistachio trees to plant, I want to plant as many as I can afford, as many as I can. I'm going to fill every space that I'm given. Dad, could I have the backyard for like 20 years? No. Oh, man. But if he gave that to me, I'd just fill up every space possible because of reaping and sowing. It's going to be more. It's going to be later. So if you have opportunity, that means, okay, how am I going to love others? So where does that start? I mean, that starts with brothers, sisters, mom, dad, whoever you're under the same roof with. Whoever that is, boy, there's great opportunity right there. You've got opportunity in your cabin. You've got opportunity on the way home. You know, when you see some of this opportunity, you kind of sit down and you see somebody who's by themselves, who's kind of been pushed off. That's a great opportunity. Whoever you happen to run into, can you do something for them? Can you love your neighbor as yourself? Again, verse 13 and 14, but by love serve one another, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. It's as simple as a glass of water. Do we figure out how to love one another? Do we look for the opportunity? Because the moment you do something, don't be deceived. You can't get away with it. That is so cool. I can't get away with doing right. God knows it. It doesn't matter if it's dark. It doesn't matter if nobody else knows about it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when it happens in my life. You can't get away with it. So what an opportunity to go serve one another. Now I want you to think about it for a moment. How could I actually serve? Like how could I love one another as myself? What are the things that you could do to serve somebody else? I want you to think of it. I want you to tell me a couple of things, because every now and then we want to come up with these big grand plans of this is the way I'm going to love my little sister or my mom or my dad. But I just want whatever you can think of. What do you think? Somebody tell me. What could you do to love one another as yourself? What's something little that you could do? What do you got? Be kind. Like, do you have a specific way or thing? Not yet. Okay. I'm looking for like specific, like really detailed stuff. Yeah, what do you got? Okay, I like that, but I want to know, like, detail. What are we talking about? Was that Ann? Yep.
Yeah, generosity, whether that's, say, money or anything that you care about.
Okay, generosity. Now, if this is going to get specific, that means you're going to sit there and be like, okay, once a week I'm going to look for something that I can help somebody with, buy some, do something for them. I'm going to spend my money or my time on somebody else. Specific things. What do you got?
Just lose the useless argument.
Yeah. So you just stop it. You know what I mean? So when that argument is going on, even the good argument, you just lose it. Be okay with not having to have the last word. Yes. Okay, share the gospel with a non-believer. So you might sit here in this room here and say, okay, I know somebody that I need to tell about God's word. I need to tell what I believe in my life. Now, you've got to choose to do that. It doesn't always just kind of like land in your lap. You've got to say, okay, I'm going to go sow. I'm going to go look for a time and a place, or I'm going to try to meet them and say, I just wanted to share. This is like something I decided at camp that I wanted to make sure that I did. I want to tell you what I believe. What could you do? Okay. It's as simple as smiling at people who may walk down the street. When I was in college, I made it my goal to be able to say hi and say that person's name. So when I'm in college and there were a few of us there, I would try to figure out people's name. And I was a freshman, so I didn't know anybody. So people had to help me. You know, I saw that person. Who's that? Who's that? But by the end of the year, I was able to just say simply, hi, Joe. Hi, Melissa. And I was surprised that, like, that was a big deal. Just using somebody's name and saying hi and smiling at them. I think that's cool. How else do we love one another as ourselves? Yeah, moms are really good at that. If you want to put yourself in a rough spot there, but an accountability partner who's going to notice it. I actually think the accountability partner is really fun to be like the person that you say, okay, the two of us, what are we going to do together? What are we going to do to like help somebody? Me and a friend decided to do this. We were out of college. We were working here. But we decided that we wanted to help somebody on their yard for an hour or two once a month. We just decided that that's what we were going to do. That guy who we helped with his yard didn't go to church when we first started working on his yard, and today he's been going to church for the last 20 years. That is so cool! And you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be in heaven, and God's going to say, remember that time you went and put in that water system at that guy's house? Good job. Reward. You'll be like, wow. That was just a couple hours. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You can't get away with it. What else? Yeah, just be polite. At times, just keep your mouth shut. Don't say that mean word. Don't say that sarcastic thing. It's not really a joke. Just be polite. I'm amazed how many times, especially these days, when you just smile at the cashier, when you say, oh, thank you, and you're polite to that person, they're like, huh, hey, you're welcome. You know, and whether they respond that way or not, I'm sowing something little, dinky. What else? What can I do? What do you got? Say it again. Okay, pick something up that they drop. Yep, what do you got? So what's that? Listen to what they have to say. What do you got?
Hold the door for them.
Something that simple. What do you got?
Giving just little compliments.
Okay, just a little compliment. Just, you know, it's free on your side. It just takes a little bit of time and effort, but to tell somebody that little compliment that even if just, yeah, those kind words. What do you got?
Make them spell their name.
To what? Spell their name right. There's probably a few of you like, yeah. Sam was an easy one for me. Not many people messed that one up. But some of you have names that just get all butchered. Okay, This is what we need to kind of figure out. And tonight, I'm going to bow my head in a few minutes. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I'm going to have you bow your head. But I want you to think of something specific. I don't want this broad, I'm just going to love God more. That's good. How? I'm going to be kind to others. How? What are you going to do differently? When you're on the van headed home, is there somebody you're going to treat different? Is there somebody that you're going to try to encourage? Is there something that you're going to do? I would sit there and think specifically, okay, what could I do at home? I think one of the cool things, at your guys' age, you should basically know mom and dad's kind of the way they operate. They have some kind of expectation for you about how clean your room is and what the chores are and kind of the way it works. At this age, they shouldn't be telling you what to do. You should just do it. Like, you can make the decision to say, okay, I'm doing the dishes until I'm out of this home. And you're like, wait a minute, we make a lot of dishes. Yeah, start sowing. You will reap. I'm serious about this. These are the little things that if you're going to help and be an encouragement, it's going to be an encouragement to your mom that you just get up from dinner, or when you come home, you just do all the dishes in the sink, and you do that every day until you leave the home you're in. And you're like, wow, now he's getting serious. That's like work. Yeah, because you can't get away with it. What are you going to do with your mom and your dad? Some of you are really good at pushing buttons. You can just... You've got to choose to stop pushing those buttons. You've got to choose to say, you know what? I know I can get under my mom's skin. I can make my mom so mad. I mean, volcano. Don't do that. Stop it. Love her. Love your dad. Yeah, well, you'll know, but they're kind of like they're not always so nice to me. I don't care. You are the one sowing in your life, and you will reap what you sow. I think you need to start thinking about your brothers and sisters, older and younger. You got to figure out, okay, what can I do for them? What about your neighbor? What can I do for them? What specifically can I do that would just be helpful? Something as simple as a cup of water, but it can be bigger. What about your church? Just kind of click through your church, 3 or 4 families. What can I do for them? Your full-time job is to love one another. And if you keep on sowing, just sow, there will come a day where you're able to say Philippians 1:21, for to me to live is Christ. And to die? To die? That is gain. Oh, man. You know, all this coronavirus stuff, there's a lot of people afraid of dying because they don't know what's going to happen afterwards. There's enough life in my life that I'm like, okay, I've been sowing for a while. I'm kind of looking forward to dying. Not that I need to now. But there is a portion of me that says, you know what, it's a lot of work to live here on earth. It's a lot of work to keep on sowing. I'm kind of looking forward to heaven. I really am. Because for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain, only if you have been living in the Spirit. Only if you have been sowing to the Spirit. Only if you have been living according to the Word of God. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? Tonight, counselors, once again, you're looking about. And once again tonight, you can opt out of these questions. You don't have to answer them, but I would encourage